Hi everyone. So my name is Sarah McCarthy and I'm an associate policy researcher at RAND. It's a think tank out in Santa Monica, California. Before I get started, we're going to make this a little bit more participatory because there's not a single window in the room and it's dark and cold outside. So let me get a sense of who I'm talking to. How many people here are from the Deep South? Raise your hand. Hi. Hi. Okay. How many people have been to the Deep South before this trip to, we're not in Jackson, Mississippi, we are in New Orleans?
Can you define Deep South?
Yeah. Oh, tricky. Just sort of half raise your hand if you think you've been there. That's a great question in terms, the question was to define the Deep South. Let me see how many people we have in the room. Okay. All right. So we have people familiar with this. So let's go ahead and jump in. I'm going to talk about high rates of risks for HIV and other STIs among sexual minority women in Jackson, Mississippi. So before anything, I want to speak to my collaborators, which I'm excited. I have some people in the room here. In terms of Jackson, Mississippi, we worked with an awesome team of researchers at University of Mississippi Medical Center, specifically with Dr. Leandro Mena. If you ever have the chance to meet or work with him, you are a lucky person. And then also a wonderful NGO, My Brother's Keeper. In Providence, Rhode Island, we worked with different people at Brown University, as well as Miriam Hospital. And then there's me, 3 months in at RAND. All right, so the overview of the presentation, I'm going to spend a little bit of time on the research context because I think that's important. I'll give you some background information, talk briefly about the methods, results, and then the implication of the results going forward. All right, so as for the research context, I think it's important to talk a little bit about Mississippi in general. Unfortunately, across a lot of different indicators, Mississippi gets a lot of attention. With respect to employment, the unemployment rate is 7.7%, the second highest unemployment rate in the country. And then shifting to education, in a national school performance evaluation, Mississippi ranked last in the country. And I actually looked at a couple of different surveys because I didn't want Mississippi to be last over and over again. And unfortunately, across the different things I'd looked at, Mississippi consistently came in one of the lowest quintiles. And then with respect to health, there was a composite indicator of health, including looking at diabetes, smoking, obesity, binge drinking, and physical inactivity, and it also ranked Mississippi last in the country. I think also what's really important when we talk about the Deep South, unfortunately, this is what we hear most often with respect to the unemployment, the education, and the health. But I also think it's really important that we speak to the strengths of Mississippi. So with respect to politics, Mississippi is home to incredible activism, from Megbert Evans of the Civil Rights Movement to the students from the Jackson State University who received national attention in their protest against the Vietnam War. And then shifting to the music and the arts, we've got I'm not from Mississippi, but Mississippi has B.B. King, Elvis Presley, Tennessee Williams, James Earl Jones, and even Oprah Winfrey. That's impressive. All were born in Mississippi. I also found out Britney Spears was also born in Mississippi, just a fun fact there. And then with respect to food, this is important. Has anybody had sweet potato pie from Mississippi? Okay, we've got just for the recording, we have 4 people that raised their hand. That's critically important. It's amazing, okay? I know that New Orleans in particular is known for poor boys as well. Fried chicken and barbecue are all done right in Mississippi. And the best barbecue is actually in gas stations, at least in Jackson. May not be the – I see they're nodding their head. It's true. See, I know what I'm talking about. So I really do think it's important to talk about these things, you know, that so often we hear the negative, but there is a sense of culture and belonging and being from particular to Jackson and pride that comes with that that is to be celebrated and I think also tapped into when we're talking about how to address these larger structural issues that relate to poverty, limited resources, et cetera, et cetera. All right, so focusing a little bit on HIV/AIDS, specifically in Mississippi. So there's a high prevalence of HIV/AIDS. Jackson, Mississippi is a metropolitan area with the 4th highest prevalence of people living with HIV/AIDS in the country. Then shifting to look at the disparities within HIV rates, while African Americans represent 37% of the state's population, they comprise 75% of the HIV/AIDS cases in the state. Importantly, a recent study, and I think this was just in 2013 that it came out, a recent study found that African-American bisexual women in Jackson, Mississippi were 2.5 times more likely to have STIs compared to women who have sex with women only. All right. So what did we try and do here in this analysis? It was a secondary data collection, so there's some limitations in terms of what we could actually look at. It was based on cross-sectional data that was collected at an urban, publicly funded STI clinic in Jackson, Mississippi, between January and June of 2011. In terms of the actual sample, of the entire sample population, I think there were just about 1,300 individuals. We looked specifically at women, so as you can see, there are 851. In terms of those who identified as heterosexual, just about 90%, and then as those who self-identified as sexual minority, just about 10%. In terms of the sample composition, I do want to say that we did a sub-analysis to check self-identified sexual orientation, and it was pretty consistent with reported sexual practices. And I also want to flag the use of the term sexual minority. I think it's really problematic. When we assume a minority, that then says there's a majority. So I encourage us to talk about other words that we can come up with and still get funded with an NIH grant that helps us understand who it is that we're talking about, and to also understand that there's a diversity of individuals within the term a sexual minority. So just sort of an asterisk, if you will. All right, in terms of the analysis, for the individual level correlates, we used a simple bivariate chi-square test. And then with respect to sexual behaviors, this was examined at the partner level using generalized estimation equations to account for the clustering resulting from participants reporting on a maximum of 3 sexual partners. The big bins that we looked at with respect to risk factors was substance abuse, sexual practices, and then also sexual network characteristics. Okay, so what do we find? First, just talking about the sample a little bit, I want to be very clear that, again, we were looking at the differences between heterosexual women and sexual minority women. So with respect to age, there was really no statistically significant difference in the age of participants. And then with respect to education, we see that sexual minority women were less likely to have a GED or at least some college education. With respect to income, sexual minority were less likely to have a higher income. Looking at some of the STI diagnosis, and this was pulled from individuals' medical charts, so this wasn't based on self-reported data, there were not statistically significant differences. I'm confusing this with men. Yes, okay, so the ORs that I'm reporting here are the differences between sexual minority women and heterosexual women. So with respect to the rates of chlamydia, gonorrhea, and any STI in the past year, what I do think is important is that specifically with respect to the rate of chlamydia, that this was twice as high compared to CDC data from that was collected from STI clinics nationally. Now, that data from the CDC was not further disaggregated by race and ethnicity, nor was it disaggregated by sexual orientation or sexual practices. So I do feel like it's a little bit of apples and oranges that we're saying there. Importantly, though, it was both collected from STI clinics. All right, so what we saw with respect to substance abuse, sexual minority women reported significantly increased odds of substance abuse across every category. Every category, okay? So looking at episodic drinking at least once a month, reported marijuana use, reported crack or cocaine use, and also other types of drug use. And each of those findings were statistically significant. All right, sexual minority women also had a higher number of lifetime sex partners. We use different cut points, and the one that I'm reporting here is more than 10. Also, sexual minority women were more likely to report ever receiving gifts of favors, food, shelter, transportation, money, drugs, or alcohol for sex. Looking at some of the sexual network characteristics, sexual minority women were more likely to report concurrent relationships, also report alcohol or drug use for themselves at the individual level, as well as alcohol or drug use by their partner at last sex. That's a lot of statistically significant findings when we're talking about a whole range of risk factors. So I think the note that I want to end on is to say that these results highlight a whole range of high-risk sexual and substance use practices among African-American sexual minority women. You know, one of the things that I do when I'm teaching my undergrad class on public health is I really encourage my students to talk about and think about who they are and reflect on how their experiences influence the work that they do. And as my own self, I very much think of myself as an HIV researcher, and I think part of being an HIV researcher in my own experience, not saying this is across the board, but it is very much what you're talking about, that limitation of focusing on the biomedical risk that increases certain individuals to be more likely to have a risk of transmission for HIV. I think what this data speaks to is the second that, one, are we asking sexual minority women if they're having unprotected anal intercourse? Two, if we shift from just looking narrowly at HIV to a wider range of issues related to STIs as well as pregnancy and the bins get bigger, then we start to see a very different picture. And I think we really need to think about not talking about shifting the focus and attention to MSM, but saying, okay, let's maintain that focus because it's critically important. And at the same time, how do we make sure that we're not missing significant numbers of people that are at substantially increased risk across these different domains as a result? Thank you very much.
So we have some time left. Does anyone have questions for any of our panelists so far? Yes, please.
So that higher number of partners, was that of the same sex or of multiple sex?
The question was, of the higher number of partners, was it same sex or multiple sex? Multiple, that's interesting. I think it was both. That for each individual, they reported on three partners. We didn't do a further analysis to see how many of those three partners were just the same sex versus both male and female sex.
I will be interested in that because the higher number of male gives higher number of carcinoma cervix.
I'm sorry, higher number of men gives higher...
higher amount of carcinoma cervix.
Okay.
One of the very important cause of carcinoma cervix is multiple exposure to multiple men, not women.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, I think it's a great point. And
so that's something you might want
to... I'll put it on my list of things to do, absolutely. Was there another question? Yep. Mm-hmm.
So just a follow-up to that, did you define sex for them, or did you just ask about sexual partners and have them...
No, we did define it in terms of anal, vaginal, or oral.
Okay.
Mm-hmm.
So at least there's maybe some...
Yep, yep. Yes, please, in the back. Actually, we did do a sub-analysis. As is always the case when you start to get into the smaller number of groups, ultimately we decided to keep it in terms of heterosexual and sexual minority women. What I can tell you from that sub-analysis, just because we wanted to understand what the differences were, is that bisexual women did report higher risk factors compared to lesbian women. So not so surprising given the things that we're talking about here today, but that's what we found in our sub-analysis. And I do, is there such thing as giving a plug? I don't think so. But tomorrow I'll actually be presenting on what we found with sexual minority men. And it's a completely different story. Completely different story. And that's all I'm going to tell you right now. Yes?
So when you say bisexual and lesbian, do you mean by identity or by...
Yes, so you're just asking how we defined the sample. If it's based on sexual orientation or sexual practices. Mm-hmm.
Bisexual versus lesbian. Were you just looking at behavior, or were you looking at...
What we decided at the very beginning, because there was high concordance between self-identified sexual orientation and sexual practices, that we stuck with self-identified sexual orientation. And so the sub-analysis that we did was based on self-identified sexual orientation.
Right, so you don't know women who are identifying as lesbian were actually having sex with men.
Correct, and it's something that we could easily... as you begin with the beginning of analysis, you have hundreds and thousands of tables, and I know one of them did, in fact, look at it with respect to sexual practices, so I'd be happy to get your email and pull up that data and relay it to you. Yeah? Any other questions? Great. Thank you.